Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Welcome to Code Delicious with Dr. Mike. I am Dr. Mike, and we've got a great segment for you coming up. And don't forget to head over to CardioChef.com and subscribe to the newsletter so you can get the newsletter with all the information and recipes ahead of each week's episode. I am absolutely delighted to be joined today by Amanda Archibald. She's a registered dietitian, a good friend of mine, and probably one of the smartest people on the planet. She is uniquely trained as both an analyst and a nutritionist. And that's a really cool skill set because you combine that with her culinary expertise, and she's really giving us a whole new perspective, a whole new viewpoint on food and health. She's been involved in lecturing, teaching, and helping people experience food since 2003, well over a decade. And she continues to push the envelope, teaming with culinary nutrition medical experts. I had the great pleasure of working with her on a cutting-edge course last year in Colorado. She's doing some more pioneer work in food and gene culinary crosstalk. So without any further ado, let's bring on Amanda and find out what the heck she is up to. Hey, Amanda, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Mike. Wait, I sounded really good there. Thank you.
Well, that's because you are really good. That's because you are really good. Yeah, I know that, and I tell the folks from personal experience, it was just so much fun doing really what's a cutting edge course, and we've taken the basis of that and actually expanding that here with some folks at the University of Montana. So you know that was a real powerful seed we planted together, and you've been up to some things working in functional food nutrition medicine. So first, can you tell the folks at home? You know, a lot of people still don't even know what functional medicine and functional nutrition is.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's always scary, you know, when I'm talking to a physician and you're saying, "Hey, what is functional medicine?" You know, so just to clarify for your audience, I, as you said, I'm a dietitian. I am not a physician, but I work with many physicians like yourself. So functional medicine, I think the best thing for your viewers to really understand it is to go over to the Institute for Functional Medicine and go kind of look at what they do. But really, they have like this whole body or mind body, I would say whole body, whole systems approach to medicine. So we're not treating, you know, the bones separately from the heart or the heart separately from the kidneys. It's a functional integrative approach. So from a nutrition perspective, and you'll love this because you and I really get deep in the science on nutrition, right? We can spend hours and hours because we're very geeky on the science. So functional, right, really geeky. It's hard working with Mike because he is absolutely meticulous about the science, and so am I. So, right? So functional nutrition is not like what I call package-in-a-box nutrition. What we're looking at, which really goes deeply into my work, is what is the functionality of food and nutrients of bioactives in our innate biochemistry? So we're not looking at percentages. You love this, Mike, right? Percentages of fat, saturated fat, right, or polyunsaturated, right? We're not looking at food label nutrition. We're looking deeply at literally how food functions in the body.
I think that is so important because unfortunately for 50 years, you know, we've been directed through professional organizations and government recommendations and guidelines. It's like X percent of fat, no more this, you know, than this percent saturated fat. And I really truly believe, and I want to know your opinion, I think that is completely the wrong way to understand food and the food experience.
It is. Amen. And you and I know that from working together last year. So for your audience, Mike and I worked together on this really cutting-edge program. But you know, unique to our busy lives, it was only when we literally got together and presented, we said, oh, we really do have the same message here. We're actually presenting the same research. So we are absolutely on the same, right, the same page there.
Absolutely. Oh, so Go ahead.
So, you know, so when you think about food and functionality and these sort of broad-based epidemiologically focused guidelines, when you look at genomics, which is that's really where my work is in culinary genomics, nutrigenomics actually tells us that every single person is different. you know, our feet, we're a reflection of the environment we live in and the food, how the food we're eating interacts with our innate physiology. So, you know, you and I can eat exactly the same foods and have completely different physiological outcomes, which shows up in our biochemistry. You know, it shows up in our lab.
And I think, yeah, you know, as a broad kind of easy example for that always comes to mind when you bring that up, which is a great point. You know, I always tell folks, hey, just look, you know, some people have a food allergy, right? I can eat a peanut mm-hmm. and use it for nutrition. Somebody else will eat a peanut and die. And,
exactly.
You know, it's a little oversimplification of what you're getting into. But, you know, I think it's kind of a good out of the box example. And you bring up that this kind of leads into genomics. And can you tell us, you know, exactly what is that? That sounds like a scary word.
Genomics. All right. So genomics is you'll love it, Mike, because you already know about it. But it's the study of how the effects of food and the food constituents like polyphenols, for example, affect gene expression. So it's literally how the food that we eat influences the behavior of our genes, whether it can turn them on or turn them up, off, turn them up and turn them down. So
and that's,
here we
that
are.
Is what you just really? Said is mind boggling. I mean, folks,
it's
think
amazing.
About this. It's just
yeah.
think about this. And I don't think it's something that, you know, certainly, you know, when I was going through college and medical school and postgraduate training, you know, we never talked about something that you eat actually turning on or amplifying or turning off gene expressions. We often think, oh, well, you know, these genes get flipped on and the body makes these proteins and these other mm-hmm. things and, you know, magic happens. But you're telling me and the audience that if I eat a certain thing, then that may actually turn a gene on in my body or turn it off. Is that right?
Yes.
Wow.
Essentially. Well, you know, we're making it super simple, but yeah.
Right.
And this is really the next food conversation as we move into personalized medicine. We're already getting into that space. That your genomics is your blueprint for life. You know, it's literally, we're at the stage now where we can look at your genome. It depends which company you're working with. And we can produce a report that literally will tell you, okay, you don't detox well or you are subject to more inflammation than maybe your mother simply because of what we call these single nucleotide polymorphisms or SNPs, which are typos on your genes that really, when we see these typos and we find a pattern, say, in an inflammation, it tells us from a nutrition medical perspective that we might need to support you a little bit differently with specific foods or supplementation because you don't deal with the inflammatory response well. So to give you an example, we just did a program on sports genomics. So think about it. When you are at the top of your field as an ultra athlete or even an Olympian, but you have consistent injury issues or inflammation issues, when we look at your genomic report, we can start to put together the pieces that suggest why you're having recovery issues because you have some typos, a pattern of typos or SNPs that actually are pro-inflammatory. So now from a medical perspective and a nutrition perspective, we know how to intervene with very, very specific foods and then measure whether we're effective. That's functional medicine at its best.
So let me ask you sort of a hypothetical question because this is it opens up all these possibilities and our genome doesn't change. It's something we're born with. So can you get, say, a young kid, maybe, you know, a couple years old, 5, 6, whatever, and then look at their genome and say, hey, you got to watch out for this down the road and sort of intervene in a preventive fashion maybe 50 years before that person would have a heart attack?
You know, it's a brilliant question. And one of my partner, Bobby Klein, who you know is an MD, and Joe Beltman, who's a PhD, we had this conversation about 6 weeks ago. I said, it is ridiculous that we have the power of this medical magic. It's not magic, it's science. We have that ability. Why aren't we swapping a baby when they're born or whenever, you know, ethically you can do it? And we have that genomic blueprint. Well, you know, it's expensive. It could be expensive to do, but it's not as expensive to intervene as a 1 or 2 year old as it is to deal with somebody who's 35 year old with already osteoporosis, osteopenia, if you think about it. So you're right.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
That's how I feel about it. Right. Well, cardiovascular disease, your area. I don't want to put you out of business, Mike, but come over to my
hey,
side,
that's,
you know, but
That's what I'm working for. You know,
yeah,
it's kind of
exactly.
funny. It's some of us are, you know, we're actually working to kind of put ourselves out of business. But I tell folks,
yeah,
you know what?
Right.
I'd rather, you know, have you at a course like you and I did and teach you how to cook,
yeah.
And
yeah.
let you have a wonderful, you know, joyous existence than meet you, mm-hmm. you know, at 2 a.m. in the cath lab and have to give you a coronary
exactly.
stent and give you a bunch of pharmaceuticals. So, I'll definitely put myself out of business and, you know, just retire to the kitchen, as it were.
Well, we talk about that. Yes, exactly. But the kitchen is so powerful in medicine. And I think that's, you know that, I mean, because you're both a chef and a cardiologist. And we're seeing this wave, as you and I investigated, of, you know, physicians stepping into the kitchen. But in genomics, which is the cutting edge of medicine, the kitchen and nutrition is the foundation of that specialty. Because we use food and food-derived bioactives to send signals, you know, to stimulate or support protein production, if you will, or to support our innate biochemistry to do the work it's supposed to do. That's what
I thought about nutrition. Could you share with us kind of an example, maybe something that you found, like in terms of, hey, this person, even if maybe they hate broccoli because broccoli isn't good for them, or they hate Brussels sprouts, maybe there's a reason they hate the taste of Brussels sprouts because it
yeah.
isn't good for them. Is there could you share with us kind of a specific food example if you have one?
Of how food can intervene genomically, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, yeah, or like something that, you know, that maybe it's, you know, it's out there for everybody, but if
yeah,
one person has something, it's good for them, and maybe it doesn't help
yeah.
somebody else, or maybe it even does something bad to somebody else.
Yeah, no, let me give you an example from our favorite cruciferous vegetables, and I do actually want to give an example, which I think you'll find is just, you know, genius, where we're working blind with people where genomics will tell you exactly how to work with them. So if that's okay, I'd love to come back to that after I answer your question.
Oh, sure.
It's just genius for us in the medical field and the nutrition field. So to answer your question, we all kind of laugh, those of us who can remember George Bush Sr. or George W.
Yes.
who said, I can't stand broccoli. I can't remember which one of them.
It was one of the Bushes,
It was one of the Bushes, and then so the whole nation goes off broccoli or whatever. But we all kind of know, if you see a dietitian, you got to eat your leafy greens, right? Or eat your
right.
But if you ask people, they don't know why they're eating it. They'll just say, quote, it's good for me. So
right.
a couple of things here. The first thing is, when we look at things from a genomic perspective, we want to isolate from food constituents that will talk to our genes, right? Because our genes code for proteins, and proteins are what do the work in our body. Well, you and I deal with a lot of inflammation in our work. And so what we want to do is try to put out the fires of inflammation. And one of the ways we can do this is through cruciferous vegetables. When we eat cruciferous vegetables in the raw, so we're not cooking them, as soon as we chop or chew them, so think of a slaw or just chopping cabbage, we set in motion a reaction from an enzyme called myrosinase, and you and I talked about this last year. So myrosinase will actually convert the glucosinolate compound in cabbage into an isothiocyanate called sulforaphane. Sulforaphane is our gold dust. What sulforaphane does is it turns on, or it helps turn on, a pathway called NRF2, so big N, little R, little F, and the number 2. This is genius because NRF2 will then basically code for these powerful antioxidants. So these are, we call them endogenously produced. They're produced in the body. You can't eat them. And they will put out the fires of inflammation in the simplistic way at the rate of a millionth per second instead of a 1-to-1. So what that means is when we look at inflammation, we can ask our patients, listen, you have inflammation. Anyone who comes to see you, Mike,
right.
has inflammation
right.
somewhere in the process. Right? They're at the end stage of inflammation, probably, or, you know, the deeply, you know, way, way down the road. So what I say to people is, do you want to put out the fire with a teacup of water, the bucket of grit, or you want a fire hose? Because if you want a fire hose, I want you to eat your cruciferous vegetables, and I want you to keep at least once a day something in the raw. Because, and so now you can kind of see the biochemistry in the latter, because the raw provides that stimulus to produce the fire hose effect in the cell. And
so, does something happen if we cook it? If we, what happens if we cook it? Do we lose that?
So here we're looking at genomics or nutrigenomics. So if we cook it, we denature that enzyme, that myrosinase. So then you most scientists agree, you totally denature their enzyme. So then you don't produce any of the sulforaphane, which is the stimulus. Some scientists say, well, you don't completely reduce it, but you make it really ineffective. So why mess with it, right? All you do is you say, some days I want to cook my cruciferous vegetables because they still have deep nutritional value. What we're looking at, nutrigenomics, is how we can isolate the best, you know. And
what happens if we ferment it? So we make a sauerkraut, for example. And we know that's fermented foods are good things. They help with the gut bacteria, which is another genome we have to deal with, actually.
Exactly.
So is that a good thing if we ferment? Is sauerkraut good? Because all my German descent, I've got to believe sauerkraut is power.
Yes, it is. So a couple of things there. That question came up at the Institute for Functional Medicine when I was presenting. And the nutritional biochemist there would say, if you ferment it, because you're changing the pH, you would denature the enzyme. But here's the kicker. Another PhD in the audience stood up and said, we've demonstrated that we can actually isolate sulforaphane in the gut directly via gut bacteria. But as you and I know, the health gut of America ain't looking too good. So we cannot go out there. You know what I mean? I mean,
absolutely.
It starts in the gut. So we cannot assume that in medicine. And, you know, but we could potentially say that, there are some people with super healthy guts, but it may be that we can isolate that isothiocyanate in the gut. So that says eat fermented foods because they support the beneficial bacteria in our gut. So, you know, you look at something as a system, but from a nutrition perspective, I'm all about fermented foods because they are a rich source of prebiotics, right? Feeding our beneficial bacteria. We know that maybe we may be able to convert that or extract or isolate the isothiocyanate to do the work we discussed. But at the same time, enjoy your cooked broccoli, but once a day or about five times a week, I want you to eat a slaw or something like that. So.
Well, that is so absolutely fascinating. And Amanda, you know, before we wrap up, where can folks go to find out more information on what you're teaching and maybe some information kind of about what you do?
Yeah, right now, if you go to fieldtoplate.com, you can find out about what I'm doing. So that is for the public. If you have any clinicians listening in or people who work with clinicians, you want to go to NCG, so that stands for Nutrition, Culinary Arts, Genomic Medicine, so NCGHealthSolutions.com, and you will see what we're doing in genomic medicine. It's fabulous work.
So what do you... So it is, and it really is, sort of, it's even beyond the cutting edge. It's sort of the bleeding edge. And so very, very important. Real quick, if you could look in the crystal ball, do you think that within our lifetime we'll be treating diseases with food, bringing it back as medicine?
We already are, Mike. I mean, that is what we're doing in genomics. I mean, it's the foundation of what we're doing. But it's like organics. It took a long time to grow the groundswell. That's where we are. We're at the tip, and definitely in our lifetime. I'm seeing the next 5 years, really.
That is so exciting. And I want to thank you for being here. We've got to have you back. We just sort of touched the tip of the spear on that. So Amanda Archibald, that's fieldtoplate.com, folks, if you want to check it out, see what she's doing. And we don't want you to go anywhere. We've got much more Code Delicious coming up next.